Yo soy no,
porque yo no.
I'll give the DJ an effort to reduce his delegation. Okay, my name is Stephen Joff. I'm the Director General of the Department of Science and Technology.
I'm Dan Murphy from DST.
Marjorie Pires from DST.
I'm David Mabola from
I'm Temba Dramini from the Department of Science and Technology.
I'm
the Advanced Ministry of Science and Technology.
It would have been useful if you told us what you are doing there, because there may be questions that arise from members that may be directed to. Well, if you are in treasure or in communication or something like that, that's how we can introduce ourselves.
I'm Dan Moach again. I'm a deputy director general responsible for information.
Marjorie Pires, I'm also one of the DDGs, and my focus is on social economic partnerships within government and with industry and so on.
I'm responsible for policy and strategy.
Temba Dlamini again, Deputy Director General, responsible for corporate services.
Mayukholani Malapane, I'm the DST CFO.
Luanda Franz, I'm the Parliamentary Rights Office by the Ministry.
Yeah, that looks relatively useful. I'll therefore give the DJ to give a coverage of what their plans are for this coming year or years. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to get the best microphone next to me. So, the department is delighted to have this opportunity to share with the committee what we plan to do in the next 2 to 3 years. We have circulated both the document and the presentation. I may not speak to all the slides that are in the presentation, some are more for the info for the portfolio committee. So the content of the presentation will try and give a strategic overview of what this MGEF is focusing attention on. We'll try and provide some high-level strategic goals that we anticipate. We thought it would be useful to give some recent outputs from the work that we've done in the last couple of years. And then we'd like to talk about a new document which was noted by Cabinet, the 10-year innovation plan, which is guiding the work that we do at the moment. We'll give some performance indicators and targets that we set ourselves up for the next 3 years. And then we'll give a sense of our human and financial resources within the department, including the organogram. And then we'll highlight the public entities that report to the ministry that help us to execute our work. So this corporate strategy is aligned to the medium-term strategy framework, where the emphasis will be on the importance of the role of science, technology, and innovation in speeding up economic growth, creation of decent work, as well as poverty alleviation, in other words, providing sustainable livelihood. It emphasizes the need to build on the current range of strategies and support programs that are already supporting innovation in small, medium enterprises and large firms, research and development in the private and public sectors, with the emphasis on areas of biotechnology and pharmaceuticals to deal with the health challenges we have in the country, the use of space science and technology for land use planning and disaster monitoring and climate change monitoring, energy security to look at providing renewable and alternative energy for using science and technology in
deal with other opportunities that are presented by climate change. Here, for instance, we are asked to lead a task that looks at the creation of green jobs within the country. So in this regard, the appropriate and continuous and effective implementation of the Cabinet and Austerity implementation plan, we think, would be extremely crucial. This slide tries and gives an evolution of the document of strategy and policies that are guiding the work of the department. In 1996, we published a science and technology white paper, and then in 2002, a document called the Research and Development Strategy was adopted by Cabinet, and that document focused on two areas. It focused on the science missions and it focused on the technology mission. I've given at the top the highlights of what those science missions are, but I'll talk about this in much more detail later on. And then at that time, the department was, part of the Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, but in 2004, a decision was made that the Department of Science and Technology should stand alone. And then in 2007, Cabinet merged the Tenure Innovation Plan, and then at the same time, the National System of Innovation was reviewed and benchmarked against other systems by a team that came from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And at the moment, we are busy trying to then translate this policy document into implementation policies. And I will share those in much more detail later on. But we thought this is a very important slide to just show the evolution of the work that we do in the department. I also thought it will be extremely important to highlight where the department focuses on in terms of its work in relation to other institutions. So I will spend the next two slides trying to explain what we do. Now, research starts from basic research, which gets done at the university. And then it's translated into applied research. And then you change that into developing technology, and then you put that technology in the marketplace. And then, as you can see on the left-hand side, on the basic research side and the applied research side, it's mainly the higher education institutions that perform research on that side. We, as the Department of Science and Technology, through the National Research Foundation, fund research in higher education institutions. So that's the only thing we do in the higher education institution. The other activities of higher education with undergraduate work and other work in higher education institutions is not for money. We then do fund science councils who then work in translating basic research into useful knowledge that goes into industry. The ministry has four science councils that report directly to it. These are the CSIR, the HSRC, the Africa Institute of Southern Africa, as well as the National Research Foundation. There are other science councils that we have in the system, but they do not report to the Department of Science and Technology. In the next slide, I will explain why that is the case. And then, of course, there is business. We do fund research where business, in partnership with other universities and science councils, perform research which is not at a competitive level. So I thought this would be a useful slide to try and give the members a sense of what our mandate is. So our work, of course, at the moment, or amongst the things that we are expected to do, is to develop human capital, in other words, the people that are needed in the research environment. Unfortunately, when it comes to the development of people, we are expected to play that role across the whole value chain, as we call it. And then one of the key things that we are trying to do, and I'll explain a little bit later, is to try and help the country to translate basic and applied research into useful products and services. So what you see there on the right-hand side, where we look at the interface between the private sector and and higher education institutions and staff concerned with some of the things that we'd like to spend time
on.
Now, the second slide is this slide, which is a slide that discusses what we call the strategic management framework model. And this model helps to identify specific areas of involvement for the Department of Science and Technology. So, again, this is the second slide where I'm trying to explain what we do and what we don't do. So, at the top, as you can see, there is a green block, a yellow block, and a red block. Now, I'll start with the red block. In the red block identifies areas of science and technology which is based on standard technology, which is known, which has been proven, which just needs to be applied in order to provide a service. We've given you an example of a weather service. Another example that perhaps is relevant here is the forensic laboratory of the police. Now, to do forensics work, you don't need new technology that has to be developed. You use well-known technology to try and solve criminal activity. So in cases where we're using this standard technology to solve problems, the DST is not expected to be involved in those areas. Those areas, as you can see at the top red block, are called mature areas. Now, if I move to the second yellow block, which says the DST may be involved, here we're looking at the use of science and technology to solve new problems. Now, in that case where, for instance, we can work with forestry to look at the use of biotechnology to enhance forestry products or forestry on its own, this is the work that we then need to do in partnership with the Department of Forestry. It could be looking at how we can improve the health of a nation using science and technology, and therefore we can partner with the Department of Health to look at how science and technology can solve the particular problem. Yesterday, I gave an example last time of the use, for instance, of nanotechnology for providing a solution in health where patients who are suffering from TB who have to take a suite of cocktails of drugs default because they cannot take the drugs for a long period of time. However, if you use nanotechnology and encapsulate these cocktails, you can have one capsule which then allow a slow release of these capsules in the body. This is the work that we do in this case, our partnership with the Department of Health. Now, in those areas, the Department of Science and Technology, as I say, partner with other government departments to make sure that we can provide those solutions. There are many examples I can give in this regard. And then the green area is where we are expected to play a leading role in the use and the identification of applications for new and emerging areas of technology, such as biotechnology and nanotechnology in space. And therefore, the DST plays a very, very important role in developing those areas of technology so that they will have relevance in these sort of applications. So I thought, Chair, these two slides will help to give us a sense of what we do and what we are not supposed to do. Now, I talked about science and technology missions that were identified by the National Research and Development Strategy. And these areas are divided into two parts, the science mission. And astronomy has been identified as an area in South Africa where we have an advantage because you can study the southern skies by having telescopes in South Africa. Now, most of you know that we have a telescope in Sutherland that is studying stars and the evolution of the universe. And we are currently bidding to host a radio telescope as well in the Northern Cape with the Northern Cape government. Human paleontology, again, we have a geographic advantage, and most of you are aware of the work that we are doing in this area. And I've been told that recently there's a big science announcement that will be made about two fossils that have been found in Johannesburg, which will also try and give an indication of where humankind has come from.
biodiversity with the third largest country in the world with biological diversity, and therefore we're doing some detailed research to see whether we can sustainably harvest our biodiversity for pharmaceutical industry. Antarctic research, this is an area, again, we are signatories to the countries that are having activities in Antarctica, and therefore we have a range of activities in Antarctica where we do Antarctic research. We also, in this strategy, identify key technology platforms, advanced manufacturing, where we hope to enhance the capacity of our industry using advanced technologies. We identify biotechnology, and at that time we set up a biotechnology innovation center, and later on I will highlight the work that these biotechnology innovation centers have been doing in the last couple of years. We identify information and communication technology as well as poverty alleviation as key focus areas for the department. And then we also thought that because we have a resource-based industrial economy that is reliant on resource-based, how can we try and make sure that we sustain those industries and leverage those industries for other new and therefore, this science and technology mission that we're guiding their work as they continue to guide our work as we go forward. So the principal goals of the Department of Science and Technology is to develop this innovation capacity of the system and contribute to socio-economic development. In other words, we are expected to play a very, very important role in developing economic activities and to address social problems. And I will highlight these later on. Develop our capacity to generate new knowledge, to develop the right people to do this, and to build world-class research and development infrastructure, and to position South Africa as a strategic international research and development partner and destination. So what I'd like to do, Chair, with your permission, is just to give some highlights of the outputs of some of the science and technology missions over the last couple. These biotechnology innovation centers, BICs or BRICS as they are called, they led to the launch of the National Biosafety Council. Now, as you know, when you do biotechnology work, it needs to be done in a way that guarantees safety for the citizens. And therefore, it needs to be guided by biosafety, and therefore, we've set up this biosafety platform as a platform that looks at the unintended consequences of biotechnology. Last year, a couple of years, we saw the successful completion of a second year project by the African Center for Crop Improvement, which is based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, in collaboration with the Riken Institute in Japan to generate variants of maize, millet, and sorghum. As you know, maize is a staple diet in Africa, South Africa, and sorghum, and therefore they've been looking at manipulating genes for this so that you can have the very high nutritional. We also saw through these BRICS the launch of the Biological Control Company Act in 2008, and then a company called SunBio that conducts yeast and wine-related research, development, and commercialization for the first time was spun out as a result of this funding. So we've been able to begin to set up new biotechnology companies for the biotechnology innovation center. On the development of people, we've identified that one of our biggest bottlenecks in producing high-level graduates, postgraduates and masters and PhD, is that we don't have adequate funding for honors students. And therefore, in 2008, we started a program where we provide honors students with a full bachelor with the National Research Foundation. And in this pilot, we discovered that 85% of students that were attracted were black and 55% were female students. And we discovered that after we funded these students, 80% of them wanted to stay on to master's and PhD. We also have a program that is targeting young professionals that are working at the universities who cannot continue to be promoted to higher levels through this research professional development program. And we have, in the last year and a half, been able to find about 197 young professionals who are working at universities in South Africa. We have been able to attract a high level of postgraduate students through the Center of Excellence program. We have seven, I think eight this year, the Center of Excellence in specific areas that have been identified, which were produced a total of about 220 PhDs. So in terms of our capacity to generate new knowledge, we think that the standards of excellence are really beginning to help us in that regard. We also have some programs that are targeted at taking unemployed science, engineering, and technology graduates and put them in science council, science center. So 2 years ago, we had 125 of these unemployed graduates, and we employed them in the 22 science centers. And we continue to be involved in programs to create awareness about science and technology in youngsters. And we conduct every year a science week. And in 2008, we have expanded the number of sites in which this activity is being done. And we've been able to get 195,000 participants. And over 3 million people were reached in terms of the awareness of what science and technology can do generally, but also to attract the youngsters. We conduct every year the research and development survey that tries to get a sense of how much money we invest on research and development. In 2004, thereabouts, Cabinet agreed that we should target 1% of GDP invested in science and technology by 2008. And the survey that was conducted last year for 2006 and 2007 showed that we are at 0.95%. So we think that 07, 08, and 08 and 09 probably indicate that we'll reach that target of 1%. In this survey, we continue to find that business continues to be the major performer of in-house research at 66.9%. And we have 39,591 researchers and support staff in both the public and the private sector. And approximately half of those are full-time equivalent researchers. This, again, is just a graph that shows, again, the R&D expenditure as the percentage of GDP over years. And you can see on the blue line that there has been a significant increase in the last couple. So what I'd like to do now is to talk about the 10-year innovation plan, which is a plan that articulates an innovation path to contribute fundamentally towards the transformation of our economy to a knowledge-based economy. And it's informed by triage and decision-making, where we'd like to focus on some areas where we believe we have competence. We'd like to make sure that we have global objectives, that we use this innovation plan to transform the society and move to create critical mass. And of course, we are of the opinion that if this has to happen, small investment in innovation is required. We've then identified five areas of importance for the 10-year innovation plan. The first one, farmer to farmer, it's an attempt to say that if we have so much biological diversity, how can we convert that biodiversity into a pharmaceutical industry? We've identified space science because we believe that it is a very important technology which is used to enhance, for instance, agricultural yields. It's used for disaster management. It's used for land use planning. And therefore, we'd like to enhance or take advantage of the space heritage that this country used to have for a variety of observation applications. On energy, as I've mentioned before, there are new renewable energies that are dependent on new science and technology, and therefore we are busy investing in a number of new energy areas so that hopefully in the next coming years we have the right energy mix that allows us to meet our own challenges but also to meet the challenges of climate change. Global change with a focus on climate change is an important area that we would like to understand
new science and technology to do both the mitigation adaptation, actually understand what impact at the regional level this climate change will have. And then we've identified human and social dynamics for the important area, because we believe that there are many, many changes that are happening around us in the world that we don't fully understand. And therefore, we will have a focused program where we'll try and understand the human and social dynamics in an ever-globalized and changing world. And these will be done using the knowledge infrastructure that we have, human capital initiatives that we have, and where it makes sense, we'll also have technology development and innovation, trying to meet the challenges that are identified in these five climate challenges. So the medium-term initiatives then is to establish and operationalize the Technology Innovation Agency and the National Intellectual Property Management Office in order to address the gap, which we call the innovation chasm. I'll explain this a little later, and facilitate the exploration of basic research output for socioeconomic development. We would like to address the fragmentation of funding instruments that are currently evident in the national system of innovation, and I will explain this a little later with a model which we propose, which we call Centers of Competence. We would like to establish partnerships between government, academia, and industry in respect of translation of a greater proportion of research and development into technology-based products and services so that we can have a commercialization. Now, the intellectual property bill for publicly financed institutions has been now signed, and as I say, it then opens an avenue for us to set up this intellectual property management office. Now, the importance of this bill is the following. A number of publicly financed institutions get money from government. Now, in the absence of a legislation that guides them on how to manage intellectual property, we found that some of these public institutions are exploited because they have no mechanism or no legislation to negotiate the benefits that come from the knowledge that they generate with the partners that exploit the knowledge. And therefore, this intellectual property bill provides that framework which allows the universities and other publicly financed institutions to have a framework within which they can negotiate how they can be paid or how they can share the benefits with the co-funders of research in their institution. We will be setting up the offices of technology transfer within these higher education institutions because we believe that these technology transfer have to work with the universities and researchers to help them in the translation of research results into useful products and services. We are providing courses for managers on innovation management because you can't have these offices of technology transfer unless we have adequate people who understand how to commercialize or to manage intellectual property, and then we will have a nursery of how technology can be taken to a higher level. And as I said, we already have the Technology Innovation Agency and Centers of Competence. We hope to work with other government departments in providing sectoral research development and innovation plans. In other words, if you have the Department of Agriculture and you want to have agriculture taken to secondary and tertiary level, how do they then work with the Department of Science and Technology to do that? We have identified regional innovation systems as an important contribution that the department can make in rural development. What we mean by regional innovation systems is to see whether we cannot work with the different provinces and develop research and development and innovation plans in support of the provincial growth and development strategies that they have. We are currently working with Free State to develop a regional innovation system for value adding in a number of sectors. In Free State, we are working with the Eastern Cape to develop and identify some sectors in the Eastern Cape and the role that the universities such as Nelson Mandela Metropolitan or the Sulu and Rhodes University can play in the development of the Eastern Cape. And so we can share this with you if you are interested. I,
I talked about the problem that we are trying to address in the research environment, where, as you can see on the left-hand side, South Africa has excellent basic research that gets done in public institutions. And we have excellent industry on the extreme right that produces products. But most of the products that are produced in private sector is through licensed technology that comes from overseas sources. Now, it is the overseas where research, development, and the production of new technology gets done, and then it's transferred to the private sector. And we believe that this is as a result of the problem that we have in South Africa around funding, and therefore this innovation cuts in the gap between the locally produced research as well as the application of that research in industry is the problem that we want to solve. So that's what we mean by the innovation cuts. So this new technology innovation agency that we are proposing is actually a mechanism to then make sure that the research, development, and production that happens overseas in cases where it makes sense that we have the adequate expertise we can do it in South Africa. So we hope to develop space technology platforms and promote the use of space. I've mentioned this earlier on. I also mentioned that we are hoping to build a big world telescope, square kilometer array, in the Northern Cape, and we are shortly set with Australia to host this telescope. The decision will be made in 2012. So at the moment, we're just building a small demonstrator in the Northern Cape of about 8 inches. We are driving the strategic interventions to stimulate innovation towards the energy security. I mentioned this. And then we are providing strategic direction in building the bioeconomy in South Africa through the National Biotechnology Strategy. I like to show this graph to explain what you mean by center of competence. And an example that is favorite for me is the bioprospecting platform that we have in a number of institutions in South Africa, where a number of universities are looking at the use of medicinal plants for identifying active ingredients that are responsible for therapeutic effects. But most of these institutions work in silos. You know, we have such an institution at the MRC, University of Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, University of Pretoria, CSIR. The idea of these centers of competence is to put all of these different technology platforms together so we can have a single country competence so that we can produce the products and the services that the country needs. So we continue to play an important role in the international arena. For instance, South Africa is one of the 4 co-chairs in an intergovernmental organization called Group on Health Observation, which is charged with setting up a global observation system across the world. We would like to deepen regional integration in science, technology, and innovation so that we can support the implementation of the Consolidated Science and Technology Plan of Action, which was adopted by the African Ministers of Science and Technology. We would like to have a protocol within the SADC countries on science, technology, and innovation, and we set already set up a South African desk in SADC, which we are supporting in order to develop this protocol and use this protocol for developing science and technology and innovation within SADC. Of course, we do this through the participation in the African Ministers' Council on Science and Technology to influence science and technology policy in Africa. Of course, we also at international level promote leveraging foreign direct investment and functional bilateral relationships, and of course, increase the number of large-scale research projects. I can give you some amount of money that we've been able to leverage from overseas to flow into South Africa from research and development. We would like to also have access to international skills and research facilities, leverage international support for human capital development programs. Within the EU program, for instance, we are participating in Marie Curie partnerships where we can have our science participating in large programs in knowledge production, and of course, knowledge and infrastructure, research excellence. want to finalize the science, engineering, technology, human capital development strategy. We would like to develop the appropriate skills that are going to help in the managing of intellectual property and the commercialization thereof. Because of the success we've had with the Center of Excellence, we'll be establishing the ninth COE this year. We started a program to develop research capacity at the university by using South African research initiatives, where we provide approximately 2.5 to 3 million to researchers that do research at the university, and then we free them up from teaching duties. And this has already started to increase the output of both the students that we need as well as the research capability. We will continue to implement the youth into science strategy, and I've already talked about the elements of this youth into science strategy when I talked about the national science. I talked about the global change science plan, where we would like to be a key important role player in using our geographic advantage to contribute to the understanding of climate change. I've mentioned to other colleagues that very few people are aware that South Africa is an excellent laboratory for at least contributing and understanding climate change, because not many countries have got two oceans, the Indian Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean, meeting around its borders. A place called Redondo, we have two oceans meeting. This provides an excellent laboratory for us to research and understand the contribution of the interaction of the two oceans in climate change. We'd like to develop the risk and vulnerability atlas that will go and indicate the vulnerabilities that communities have at a regional level, and we've started this work. And then, of course, we'd like to implement a number of sector development programs in the area of agriculture, mineral processing, forestry, fisheries, agro-processing, as well as the cross-cutting area of water. These are the plans that I've talked about, where we support other government departments doing their work. I wanted to show this graph to say that it illustrates what we mean by developing research and development innovation plans in support of work in other sectors. This is an example of, for instance, forestry through that big arrow. And you can see that forestry, if it's got to be advanced forestry, it needs a number of technologies to support that industry. Manufacturing technology, information technology, energy and environmental technology, chemical and biotechnology. So our role as the Department of Science and Technology, after having explained our role, is then to work with the Department of now Agriculture, Forestry, to provide the necessary technologies in order to make sure that the cluster succeeds. So we'll continue to introduce and promote innovative technology and management systems. This is to support the creation of sustainable jobs and wealth creation in areas of deprivation, and with a focus on sustainability to contribute to the issues of stigma settlement. This is a program which we loosely call poverty alleviation in the Department of Science and Technology. And we are involved in a number of programs. We are involved in marine aquaculture activities, and I will not read through the slides, you can read through yourself, but we've been involved in a number of programs in the Western Cape, as well as in the Nelson Mandela Bay, to work with a pilot program to see whether we can not grow small medium enterprises in aquaculture in marine. And this is the same thing as well, where we've worked out with the Department of Agriculture and Water Affairs, the provincial fresh water grow up pilot, which are progressing very, very well. So we do some work in this. We do the same thing in aquaculture and fresh water. And then we are involved in the rollout of these essential oils, where we are incubating small, medium enterprises. And these will continue to be supported. And some hopefully will exit in 2010. Indigenous medicinal plants, again, we are involved in a number of projects where we're using by prospecting scientific approval grants to support communities that are involved in a number of programs using digital software. Another exciting program for us is this program where we are trying to provide broadband communication
in rural areas through this concept called wireless mesh network, which is a communication network made up of radio nodes organized in mesh technology. The schematic diagram shows how this can be used in providing broadband in rural areas, and therefore it provides connectivity in schools, it provides connectivity in to some centers, so people in rural areas can have access to government services. So the Meraka Institute, in collaboration with Motorola, has developed a radio corridor with a total distance of over 400 kilometers. We have connected 10 Dinaredi schools in Kumalana, and the Nipan East schools are also connected to this corridor. There is an example of these schools that are part of it. So we're very excited and proud about this activity and this work on the community assessments, where the universities are working with communities to try and provide solutions to some of the problems that they have. So the last part, Chair, is performance indicators that we've set up, ourselves. I've indicated earlier on that one of the things that we're trying to do is to try and attract foreign direct investment from abroad, and these are the numbers that you see. We'd like to roll out the centers of excellence because we think they're an adequate instrument for increasing both the number of students that we have to produce as well as the publications. We hope to add one this year. The number of interns, by the way, what we do is we provide an internship program in science campuses and higher education institutions for unemployed graduates. And then, of course, there are a number of projects strategically that we support in research and development. We want to increase our youth into science strategy and increase the number of learners that participate. And then within the astronomy and space engineering, we would like to increase the number of students that graduate. Currently, we think we have too many bilateral agreements that we are busy realigning them so that they will help us to align what we'd like to do. I've talked about the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency. We hope to have this finalized and operational this year. The National Intellectual Property Management Office that we work with universities in ensuring that the implementation of the Intellectual Property Act is in full place. And then we want to establish a collaboration venture capital fund. We are in discussion with private sector partners to provide some funding to help funding projects that could be translated into money. We want to continue our activities in SADC and AU, and then we'd like to roll out the biotechnology program by having a national synthetic biology program. And we have the details of that, and then we'd also like to have adequate infrastructure that is needed for research to be conducted. We want to enhance and strengthen our IKS, Indigenous Knowledge System, protection of the knowledge, and then of course we'd like to continue our programs that are aimed at supporting the development of the new cutting edge industry and selected technology machines that I've talked about, and we hope to roll out a number of these centers of competence. As an example, again, we'd like to use IT-based tools for integrated planning across seven cities and sectors. We have a program where we've been working with the Development Bank and the Department of Social Development to institutionalize the geospatial observatory, which is based on this IT tool, where the planners can just use the tool for planning. So in terms of the financial resources, we use part of the fund for running the department, and that just indicates how much of the total budget is used for that. We have a program called Research, Development, and Innovation. The bulk of the money is transferred to science councils and research institutions, international cooperation, human capital. Bulk of the money goes to the NRF. Socio-economic partnerships, this is the work that we do for poverty alleviation, regional innovation systems, as well as the work that we do with other governments. So currently, next year we'll be sitting at about 4.2 billion, and it's going to grow up to about 5 billion. So that's just an indication of the growth in the current year. This is a
different way of looking at the breakdown. As you can see, 92% of the DST budget goes into transfers, and then 5% goes into compensating salaries, 3% goes into expenses. So we hope this is an efficient cutting of the budget. This is a different way, again, of looking at it. Admin, 4%, research, development, and innovation, 27%, international cooperation, 3%, human capital, and knowledge systems, and part, again, of the money goes into people development, and then, of course, the rest that we do with the other government departments, and so much innovation constitute 28%. This shows the growth of the budget over the last 5 years. You can see in 2004-2005 we're looking at a little over a billion rand, and by this year it's just over 3.5 billion rand. You can see that over the years that the amount voted and the amount that is spent are always spent close to one another. Again, this is for information. We have the DG, the head of the department, and we have the DDG responsible for conflict services, DDG responsible for research development and innovation, international cooperation, human capital, and sharing of information. And then we have an operating officer that is responsible for high-level strategy, monitoring, evaluation, as well as making sure that we are operational and efficient. There are a number of public entities that report to the Department, Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, National Research Foundation, Human Sciences Research Council, African Institute of South Africa, and the Academy of Science of South Africa. And I assume at an appropriate stage they will come and present what they do in much more detail. So in conclusion then, Chair, we have some medium-term outputs that are driven by both the National R&D Strategy and the 10-year Commission Plan. We believe that the performance is satisfactory in the case we have highlighted. There are some steady growth in the resources, and we think that the time is right now for us to establish innovation instruments that will help us to translate the research results into useful products and services. We would like to continue focusing on developing people and the skills that are required to innovate, and we are working with public entities to help us implement the innovation plan that we talked about. So we'd like to thank you, and of course, get it on.
Thank you very much, Eugene, for the wonderful presentation. I propose, therefore, because according to our program, we're supposed that after the presentation we'll have a short break. I propose that we have a short break now, and then we come back after about 10 minutes, and then we can then interrogate the approach. Thank you very much. Members. But before we start, I'd like to have some brief chat with our researcher here. It seems because many members are new within this committee, and the issues are a little bit strange also probably to other members. I thought that it would be important to announce as to how the research unit can at least assist members. There are some procedures that need to be followed if you want the research unit to assist or backup members. And I thought it was important for her to explain to members so that it's those who are not around here, they can also be related to as to what exactly is supposed to be expected if they need help from the research unit. So, over to you.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Hello, everybody. I understand that there are members that will need some subject information for next week's budget vote. The research unit has a policy that all research quests must be tabled in writing to the research unit, and they're based on what is being asked of in terms of content and subject will be allocated to a content-specific researcher. If it is science and technology, it will come through to my office. But if you need something on trade and industry, economics, all of the different areas, it does go to a specific researcher. So I can forward the documents to members who are interested and need them, and I'll give you my contact details at the end of the meeting for if you need anything further. Thank you.
I hope it's clear. Any further, any queries on the announcement? If so, thank you very much. Right. I think we'll continue now interrogating the presentation of the department. If there are members that want to raise some questions for the department after the short presentation, I think this is the opportunity. I usually give members to make their inputs, and I become the last one if I try to waste time. Sometimes I run and I end up not having opportunity to raise issues because if members have quite a number of issues, I end up my time being taken away, but it's fine as long as members are happy, probably it's good like that. But I'll give members the opportunity now to interact with the department. I've got the hand here from the FIP.
Chair, thank you. Perhaps before I comment or ask questions, maybe just to say I'm a newcomer in this committee. I'm not familiar with it at all. So it may well be that what I have to say you might think is a bit weird or wonderful. I'm not sure which, hopefully the latter. And so we were on a learning curve. And I suspect there's a few new members here. We might all be a learning curve. So in addition to the research information you gave us, I presume that as a committee, there will be some process by which we are able to familiarize ourselves with the department in a broader sense than simply a budget meeting. And I'd also say, Chair, that this is your second meeting, as I understand it, just to table an apology with you, that I got notice to come to the last meeting when I was sitting at the airport about to catch a flight. So it wasn't due to my boycotting your meeting. That's an apology. Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. That's through to the DG. I enjoyed the presentation. And I must admit, it looks to me that to be one of those departments which is a real feel-good department. It doesn't seem to be a department beset by ideological divisions or screaming, raging political rows, which is a great pleasure at many levels. But I do have a couple of specific issues. Maybe the first one would be the following. I'm just reading the minister's comments. And in her comment, she says that if you look at the department as a whole, everything that it does, she says, and I quote, "In this regard, we will measure success by the level to which science and technology play a driving role in enhancing productivity, economic growth, and socio-economic development." Now, that sounds very laudable, but what I'd like to ask is the extent to which those objectives are part of the benchmarking, the targeting, and so on and so forth of the department. We had a long list, for example, of specific objectives, and many of them were measurable. But if I were to say to the department, please tell me what the department has done to enhance productivity in South Africa over the last 15 years, and please give us in the form of some sort of statistical measure, could that be done? If I were to say to the department, please explain to me precisely what you have done as a department in enhancing economic growth, and what's the contribution of the department's activities been towards the GDP of the past 15 years or currently, could that be done? Because if you're measuring success, it's got to be measurable, and I'm not quite sure to what extent that kind of objectives are in the presentation. That's the first. And then, Chair, it seems to me also, as a newcomer, looking at this, you know, a lot of the major sort of programmatic issues are new. You've got this whole 10-year innovation plan starting last year, taking up to 2018, and there's a whole lot of things that are about to be established, or just being established, or bills just passed. My question would be, in this regard, although the department was linked to another one for some time, essentially we have had science and technology as a department of government since 2004. What have the major successes or failures been over the past 15 years until this 10-year innovation plan has been put together? I don't know what they are. And maybe just, I don't want to hog the floor for the box question, just one last one. I was reading today's paper, there's a, probably still one, in the case of the one, the Argus, no, some big story about the National Research Foundation only allocating now on the basis of a sort of greenfield, call it a blue sky, and a blue sky program, so those doctoral students who are involved in the existing research are not being funded any longer, and there's a big hoo-ha about it. Could the department please speak to that and explain what the logic is and what's happening? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. But just that there was an important question that you raised initially, which was about sensing that people are new, issues are new, is there any effort? There will be an effort, actually. I think usually when we start the five-year term, the department takes us through for about 2 days, 1 to 2 days, on all the issues that they deal with in a kind of a workshop. And I think that's when then members get orientated about that. I think that's what we're going to be doing also in terms of orientating members. That was just to clarify that part of it. Right. We've got the first question that's been put by the member here is Honorable Ndoli there.
Yeah, thanks, Chaplin. I just wanted to check the size of this research and development at the universities. How many, and if there are a few, or what are the challenges in establishing, let's say, why don't we have each and, I mean, one folk would say one size in each and every university.
If you talk about what we're talking about, is what standard of excellence or what?
At the university. Where are they?
I thought I saw your hand, yes, honorable member from the.
Yes, the just a couple of things. The Green and Global Recession wanted to know what impact or what indications you perhaps had from any of your global partners that they might be cutting back on any investments that they will be making to cooperative projects with South Africa. And if we're going to be cutting back on energy, you have quite an ambitious program, so we'll read your annual report here. Also, just one thing I wanted to query on the draft annual report here. The expenditure estimates, where you talk about the cost of administration going up, and we have 115 million going up to 186, so we're sort of increasing the budget by 50 million in 3 years. Obviously, I believe that we have people of excellence who must be paid well, but this does seem quite a huge jump to me. I would like that explained. It also, while the department has converted itself in recent years of cutting its expenditure on phone bills and travel, I think we expected to double the assistance and travel expenditure this year alone from 7.3 million to 16.3, if I read these figures correctly. Now, I know that, it's a long way away, but that sort of bothers me, but maybe I'm just finished, but I appreciate the answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also being new to the committee, I'm still dealing to grips with the portfolio, and it was quite a good presentation. I have some specific questions. Some of the money is underspending in terms of your budget. I think you only spent 92% of your budget, and some of the unspent money was around the South African HIV vaccine trials. I'd like to hear what is the status of that at the moment. Within your domain, or has it moved elsewhere? What is the capacity shortage in terms of unfold vacancies and what plans are in place to address that. I note in the report that you say that there's not enough engineers and technologists and things like that. Is this now placed on the scarce skills register? What is the department's plan to address that? I know you said we train new people, but to attract skills from outside the country, what is the plan? And one of your weaknesses in the audit report was there was no, or the fixed asset register was incomplete. Has that now been done?
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable with the absence of the process, Honourable Law.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for that report that you gave to us. I am sure all the programs that we've got in this report that you've given us, they've got the budget available for the year. What I would like to know with the investment leverage from overseas countries, are there any conditions that are in place for that particular investment so that we must know how much then has been invested and what's the budget?
The other thing is science and technology. You've spoken about demystifying science and technology for particularly in schools. Is there a program or is there a way of demystifying science and technology for ordinary South African citizens so that they begin to understand how TIA can help them, how the IPR can help them, that intellectual property rights act can help them with whatever they come up with. University professionals, where science and technology is responsible for funding or for giving them bursaries for whatever they're doing, are there any of them that come out to public sector with the skills out of that research or to make that research useful in public sector? Nanotech, I was quite interested on the cocktail for tuberculosis, especially with the XDR. Is the capsule already available and is it being used and how successful is it? Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Member. I think I can also add my own questions. Let me just start from where this member left now. At nanotechnology level, how far is the nanotechnology program developed within the department? Particular, do you have sufficient, probably, personnel capacity that is secured to develop this program? I know because I once was when I went in China, I found that it's very developed. They have it right up to PhD level. You said something about the space science. The Israelites, they have a very advanced program where they are producing the aircraft under one company called Yauke Limited, where the cars can fly up to 3,000 feet and also move on the street. If you look into that, you're probably collaborating in terms of developing a space site. In terms of climate change, I'm sure you'll have of interest that I'm one of now those commissioners on climate change. One of the components of climate, there are actually four important components: it's mitigation, adaptation, science and technology, and finance. So it seems, therefore, that science and technology is at the center of the development of what we call smart recovery program. How far are you assisting in that process? What are the programs of the department along that line?
Thank you, Chair. The good advantage of having officials when they give a presentation, I've already warned them that I've done presentation, they will feel the questions, but I'll feel the questions as I go along. So let's start with the Honorable Christina Smith. There are three questions. Well, the first one is a comment, I think, around what direction that the Department of Science and Technology is taking. And I think the Chair did respond to how you'd like to handle that, and we'll be more than happy to help in that regard. The first question is enhancing productivity in South Africa, economic growth, GDP, could it be down? Give you some numbers in terms of what we've done. And then the second question talks about the new programmatic issues. You pointed out that seems there are a couple of things that are new, but you'd like us to share with you some of the major successes and some of the things. So try and keep it at the high level in terms of perhaps why are we introducing these new things. I haven't read the article, but I have a sense of what you're asking on the NRF issues and try and respond to that. So on the first question, we have a unit that Marjorie is running that looks at the indicators that we need to develop within the broader science and technology. And we have commissioned, I think, the unit within the Human Sciences and Research Council to do a couple of things for us, to develop measures of how you can directly measure economic growth that is attributable to science and technology, including productivity. So if the question is, could it be done? We think it can be done, but it's not going to be direct. The experience and at least knowing from what other countries have done in the policy level, that if you look at the investment in science and technology, you cannot attribute directly the economic growth to this particular investment, but investment over time can be tracked. But there are specific things that we would like to measure. And Marjorie can speak about this and what this project is all about. What I thought I would do, there's a slide here that I think during the NRDS would try and answer your question, maybe not directly, but at a high level. This slide. Now, if you look at this slide at the top, our two main goal is to improve the quality of life and to create wealth. Now, below those boxes, we have indices that we are proposing as
This is an index that can be measured, but it is a composite index that requires a lot of input in order for you to track that index. In terms of wealth creation, there is again a measure that you can use to do that. In most cases, the simple high-level measure is you can count the number of high-technology startup companies that you've spun out, or you can measure that using patents that are coming out of the system. Now, we do have a sense of how we've been doing in South Africa in terms of the patent. The answer is we've not done very, very well. If we look at the last 10 years in terms of the patent portfolio, we've remained relatively flat. And it is for that reason, on the patent side, that we are beginning to develop this innovation capacity and bridging this innovation curve that I've talked about, because we are of the opinion that if we do not, from the funding that we give on R&D, generate patents, we are not really going to meet sort of the top right hand block. But as you can see in this graph, even your wealth creation is linked to the business sector performance and technical progress, and therefore the manner in which you measure these things could probably be on bits and bits of this, so that you can get a high level. For instance, we've started to measure the technology balance of payments as a mechanism of our contribution to our economic growth. But I don't know, Marjorie, if you want to talk about this. On the some aspects on the left hand side, like the number of research workers in the workforce that you can measure, we only give that out through the R&D survey, the global share of publications that we can measure, the science and engineering PhDs on our R&D survey, we have the number of full-time equivalents that we always publish. So the answer is mixed. In certain cases, we can measure these things. In certain cases, we are beginning to develop a mechanism of measuring them. But Marjorie, I don't know if you have to comment before I move to the second.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Chief. I'm going to actually respond to the Honourable Member's question along two lines. One in support of what the DG said at the higher level, and then in terms of the actual question you asked around the productivity, that one particular issue. As the DG has indicated, we've long established that we're not that kind of department where there's a requirement for us to ensure there are enough beds in hospitals to deal with the South Africa's health and well-being. It would be easy for us to measure how many beds we've got and how many clinics and hospitals we've got, and we know we've delivered our service. If we were a Department of Education, we could say how many schools we've got and how many classrooms we've got, how many children are passing and so on. Very concrete. But when you invest in science and technology, the problem you face with is there's a whole lot else that's happening besides the money you're spending on that R&D. So at the end of the day, when there is an invention, when there is a discovery, you can't actually prove that it's only the R&D that leads to that. And for this reason, we can only associate ourselves with successes that have come out when there's new inventions, the patents that DG is talking about, the publications, the numbers of researchers growing. So those are the proxy measures that we use. And that now is for the entire system. So what we do is on a regular basis, we conduct an R&D survey once a year, because we're measuring, and that's input-based. We're measuring how much is being spent on R&D. Then the other thing we do on an annual basis now is an innovation survey, measuring just how innovative are South African companies. And we're happy to report that the most recent innovation survey found that South African companies actually rate much more favorably than their European counterparts. Now, we were, of course, quite stunned, and we were a little bit uncertain as to whether we could use these findings for South Africa to say that their companies rank higher. But if the proof is actually in your statistics that demonstrate whether in this country there's been a shift in the numbers of products that have been improved on, whether it is a complete
capital increase to that product is an indication that companies are changing, they're looking for export markets and so on. So there's another proxy measure, the innovation survey, to say how are we doing. And this, of course, gives us the indicators of where there are gaps, because then you can see which sectors and which fields are lagging behind and so on. Now, on the other hand, I said I wanted to talk more specifically to practical interventions that we have put in place and how we're faring in terms of the effectiveness of those instruments. If we take one example, if we want existing South African companies to be more innovative, to be more productive, then Chumisano comes to mind. That is an institutional instrument that the department puts in place where we utilize, we take advantage of the fact that we've got universities of technology spread across the country. And these universities of technology have got departments of mechanical engineering, departments of electrical engineering, departments of chemical engineering, and we've decided that we would place a station to that university of technology that would be of service to the SMEs in the surrounding city region. Chumisano's performance in terms of testing work it does for small engineering companies, product development it does, training it does, is such that even the IDC has a memorandum of agreement with Chumisano that any company they vetted will actually have to come through Chumisano for assessment in terms of what they are doing, and Chumisano and its stations at the universities of technology must do hand-holding for those companies to ensure that the IDC's investments are not wasted. I'm giving you those kinds of signals, and we pick up in terms of number of companies serviced by the University of Technology stations, number of companies that got help, what kind of help was it? Was it for analytical testing? Was it for training? Was it to help with developing a prototype? Was it R&D on a completely new product or just incremental ship? I don't want to take too much time, but I think I've tried on two levels to respond to that question.
Thanks,
Martin.
Now, the second part of your question is that I think there are two parts. The first part is at a high level, why perhaps are we having so many of these new initiatives, and perhaps some of the things that we've achieved in the last 5 years. Now, our view is that we have a university system and a basic research system in South Africa which is doing reasonably, I think, in the sense that we have a range of instruments. On the left-hand side of that chain that I showed you, basic and applied, we have instruments at the National Research Foundation. Maybe they're not fully funded in the way that we all would like it to do, but we have a range of instruments through what the National Research Foundation called RISA program, Research Innovation Support Agency, something like that. And therefore, we are of the opinion that, however, if we want the research to be relevant to the socio-economic challenges, funding research at universities alone without additional instruments is not going to turn automatically with the research that is done there into useful products, services, and whatever challenges that we're facing. And it is for that reason then that we are introducing this range of instruments that we are now introducing. And these include the IPRP. If you are in the game of doing research, you are in the game of generating knowledge and trade knowledge. And therefore, the tools of trading knowledge is making sure that you have an intellectual property regime that allows the trading to happen, so that if a university is funded by a private sector, there is an exchange of commodities of knowledge in one form or the other, and everybody needs to know what the currency is for the exchange of that knowledge. And our view is that the IPR Bill, the Act now, provides that framework within which universities can trade
with all those that are farming, and be it locally or be it abroad. Of course, one of the biggest problems we have in South Africa is the leakage of IP from South Africa abroad. So that's the first thing. But we also think that this IPR deal, as I've said, through these offices of technology transfer, is going to help the university to start thinking about the fact that when you are in the knowledge production game, the publication is not the only form of protecting the knowledge. Sometimes before you publish, you have to think whether this knowledge is patentable. Because we are of the opinion that it's only when we generate higher levels of patent that we will deal with the block that we have on the top right-hand corner. And therefore, we're putting these instruments to help the public finance institutions to have these tools and the awareness that is going to help them to trade in this. And of course, for the taxpayer, all of us, to make sure that we get a return on this investment that we fund it. And then secondly, we're introducing the Technology Innovation Agency as a funding instrument and then an instrument that is going to nurture and work with the publicly financed institutions in the journey of translating research results into useful products and services. As you know, it's a very thorny journey. You could work on something for 10 years and trying to commercialize, and you may not find anything after 10 years that is commercializing. And therefore, we would like to at least have an institutional and a supporting environment that on a sustained basis works with the entrepreneurs and the researchers to help us to translate this research results. And this is what the Technology Innovation Agency is meant to do. Now, if I then come back to, can I name some of the successes from the past? Yes. You probably know that last year, a battery electric vehicle prototype was unveiled in France, in Cape Town, and we are now in the process of looking at the best commercialization route for this electric vehicle that is developed in this country. And scarily enough and strangely enough, this country is now asked by a number of international partners if they can work with them in the further development of this battery electric vehicle. Some established companies, others not. Another one is we have funded through the Innovation Fund a company in which come out of the University of Pretoria and Nexa that has been looking at the possibilities of adding value in the cornea. It's based in Krugersdorp, Geratech. Now, as I said, this work started both at the University of Pretoria as well as Nexa, but it's now a company that's been spun out and is looking at going into higher value of addition around the corneum, and there are a range of applications of this the corneum all over. And then in the biotechnology area, we've spun out a couple of companies, and I've given some of those during the presentation. So these are things that we've done through the Innovation Fund and the Biotechnology Innovation Center. Marjorie talked about a Chumisana program. What she didn't talk about is a program that the Department of Science and Technology initiated, which is a program called CODIFA at the time. This was an incubation program which we started in the department, and we've now handed it over to the Department of Trade and Industry. This is a program which was geared to help small, medium enterprises to stand on their own 2 feet in a protected environment. And we can give you the statistics of the number of companies, I think, that were set up and developed through the CODIFA program. As I say, we felt we've done our bit in terms of showing science and technology incubation in this high technology startup, and then we pass it on to our colleagues at DGI. She's talked about the Chumisana program, which is a successful program where the universities of technologies or the technicons that partner with small medium enterprises and enhance their productivity or their activities through the support and the research that is being done, I think, at the universities of technicons. Again, we can give you a range of outputs that we have in that regard. Now, she's also been very, very shy about our intervention on poverty alleviation projects and the successes we've had in that regard. And again, we can give you a list of things that we've done.
So these are just specific things, but I think my best response at the higher level just says to you that we really have on the science and technology side of things been able to make meaningful intervention. Of course, we would like to have more money available for masters and PhDs. We'd like to have more money for the centers of excellence, more money for the research chairs. These things take time. Now, if you ask us what the failures are, failures rather than, I would use the word challenges rather than failures, because it's not that, I always say you failed because you've gone through an exam, you've written and you've got the results. You haven't failed if you are still in the journey. One of our biggest challenges is to increase the number of researchers. And I had a chat with my colleague earlier on to say that this is a debate that we should all have. And I agree with that suggestion. But this debate, in my view, has got to be understood in its full context. If you have a youngster who has to make a decision, usually a bright youngster, who has to make a decision when they complete their matric, whether they want to be a scientist or whether they want to be an actuarial scientist or an engineer. You don't look at what your passion is at that age. Remember, we are 17 and 18. You look around in the sector and you look at those that have followed this career that are 5 years or 6 years older than you, and you look at which cars they are driving. And their choice is usually very, very easy. Be an actuary, a scientist, or a banker, or an ICT specialist, because those are the high-paying jobs. Now, if we have to attract youngsters in science, engineering, and technology, one of the things said, now that I'm in my second term of this job, is to start a debate to say, how can we pay people that are doing research better? At the moment, we're not paying them better. So that's the first challenge. So when we start this conversation, because we do have youngsters that come and eventually do math science-related degrees as undergraduate, but most of them, as soon as they finish their undergraduate, they leave because they don't see a bright and an attractive career. And when you have your PhD, it still takes you another 7 or 8 years before you become a qualified researcher. So the journey is long, and the payoffs are very, very, very small further down the line. So in terms of bringing younger generation into the system, we think we have a challenge. And that challenge is also compounded by the fact that the older generation that has been involved in science and technology is aging very, very quickly. So this is a challenge that we all have to grapple with and deal with and find a way to address. The other challenge is the funding challenge that I said, that it is a challenge that we all have to work on and make sure that we deal with. To be a bit more precise, I mentioned the intervention that we've made on the size of the honors bursaries. Up until recently, we've been paying something like 15,000-20,000 rand for honors bursaries. The colleague at the NRF can correct me if I'm wrong, but the fees are much, much higher than that. So most of us, as the middle class, after somebody has finished the junior degree, you want them to go and work. So if you have to pay for honors and masters additional funds to keep your kid at the school, you also don't encourage them to. So we as government have to provide full scholarships and even a mechanism to keep them in the system. And that's why we have these internship programs where, you know, after they finish their honors and masters, we can keep them at least within the system and maybe 20-30%. So in my view, the biggest challenge of the system is really to make sure that we continuously get the youngsters to get excited about it. Now your last question is the NRF article, which I haven't read, but I can sense the fact that there's an argument that is going around that says the money that goes into the NRF has grown over the years, but a sizable chunk of that funding is ring-fenced funding. And therefore the baseline funding which gives the NRF, shall we say, the flexibility to have open call, is remaining constant.
I assume this is what the article is saying. They haven't read.
He's really saying that they're not funding applied research, they're funding blue skies research. So the people who are in the process of currently existing research, applied research, are being suddenly cut off direct of funding.
Well, I'd rather read the article because if that is the case of NRF funding applied research, I think the NRF should concentrate on funding basic research. Now, as I say, if my earlier assumption that the baseline funding research for the NRF has remained constant, that's true. But there's a specific reason why I think we follow that approach. For instance, what we found is that this open call has not really been, if you like, able to generate the kind of output that we would like to do. And therefore, we've identified certain areas which I think are important in line with the National Research and Development Strategy. We've invested in specific interventions such as the research chair. The NRF is still responsible for the other part of the research chair. We have professional development programs. So these are specific interventions which are helping the system, in our view, and capacitate it to do what it's supposed to do. You can then later on continue to increase the open call funding after that. So we don't think these things are contradictory. And these interventions, in our view, we can give you statistics in terms of how these interventions have been able to increase the number of publications and the standards of excellence as compared to the normal open call, how the researchers begin to increase the number of PhDs because we have people supervising students who have more time to dedicate towards the students. So it's an open debate which we're more than happy to engage. What we always run away, and sometimes you don't see us writing articles in the newspapers, is because we always feel that these articles only tell one side of the story. They never do. So we'll only engage in this discussion, Chair, if they tell the full side of the story. So, but again, I haven't read the article, so I will be... Now, I think the question, the second one was by Honorable Mutu. I wasn't sure exactly what the question refers to, but my understanding is referring to the standards of excellence and where they are located, maybe to some extent. Now, these standards of excellence, and again, my colleagues can talk about these, they are scheme specific. In other words, we identify a standard of excellence in a particular area. And therefore, if a center of excellence is in a particular area, then institutions are asked to submit proposals. And it is on the basis of that proposal that the NRF, together with the Department of Science and Technology, look at whether the proposal will be able to achieve what each of their teams is proposing. And therefore, the location of the center of excellence is not university-based, but it's theme-based. And it's up to the university that comes up with the best proposal to address the challenge that the Center of Excellence is meant to do. Now, I remember about three or four Centers of Excellence, for instance, that I think we've rolled out. The first one is on tree biotechnology. So again, people were asked to submit on biotechnology, and the University of Pretoria, Forestry and Agriculture Biotechnology Institute, then submitted the proposal. There's the other one on epidemiology and health that looks at modeling of diseases and how the treatment can be done by AFRAG. The University of Stellenbosch, I think, did that. Invasive biology, I think Stellenbosch, strong materials, I think it's the University of Bath. So the location of these is really because these things are on the scene, and therefore the university is responsible. I think we are rolling out the ninth one now on access. Yeah, some of them are in the science campus. So they are not in each university. It's because of the area that... but they have specific targets that they are expecting, irrespective of where they are, in terms of the number of black students they have to produce, in terms of the women that they have to produce, in terms of the publications that they have to. So we try and manage that very, very carefully. Now, the third question was,
You asked about the global partner and whether they're cutting down on the funding and whether there are strings attached to the funding. And then the other two questions about the administrative costs going up and the subsistence allowance, I'll ask the person responsible for operations in the department, maybe CFO, if they want to respond to that. Most of the funding that we attract globally comes from our partnership in the EU. There's some funding that we get from specific bilaterals. Now, the EU funds research in what is called FP framework program. It's now 7, it's just moved from the 6 framework program. Now, because it's an R&D funding, there are no strings that are attached to the funding. The partners, or the South African partners that participate in the consortia, in each of these programs, all they have to do is to agree on the benefit sharing in terms of if we contribute this to South Africa, what comes down to South Africa. Now, in terms of whether the funding is drying or is not drying, in this largest pool, what they have done is that in this global crisis, they would like to see whether they can find a silver lining to this cloud. And what they have agreed with the private sector stimulus package is that they would invest higher on R&D, provided that that R&D allows them to get out of this dark cloud with technologies and products that would be ready for the new market. As an example, one of the DDGs in this DG research, I was with him last week in Geneva, said that they engaged the car companies as part of the stimulus package, and they said, we will fund you, provided you're doing R&D for the next generation of vehicles, which are not based on petrol and diesel engines, which are based on electric and hybrid, as well as the fuel cell car. So that's what they said. So they are pumping more money and accelerate the R&D so that these companies will be able to make that transition that ideally they would not have done. So we think there are huge opportunities for us. We're also investing on new other technologies that they believe a lot of the products and services would be required, like in the green technologies, and therefore they're creating green jobs. So in Japan, I think more of the same thing. In the U.S., if you forget about the concern they have for the previous regime around the global change, when you go there, you actually know that states like Massachusetts are putting a lot of money on biotechnology, as well as the nanotechnology, as well as the green technology. So we think there is enough funding out there. Now, I don't know if Marcus wants to talk about the increase in the expenditure for the
They just, on that point that you've just discussed now, that is the aim of the International Commission is to drive the world from high carbon economy to low carbon economy, which is exactly why you see those engagements all over. We are going to be discussing actually now the funding of countries and companies all over the developing world in terms of moving towards a low carbon stimulus.
Thanks, Chair and DG. There are a number of factors that influence our admin costs go up. Among others, the fact that when we budgeted for personnel 2 years ago, or a year ago, Treasury always put out to us that we budget 6% for salary increase. Last year, it was 10.5% for the entire department. We have to carry that, and they didn't even keep us aside. We have to recover our own budget to make sure that we achieve that. Over and above that, we have moved to a new building, and that's a result of it. In exercise last year, the CSIR told us that we have to build our own power, mini plant, to provide ourselves with electricity, because they were running out of supply. And we have to budget for that. We have to increase our admin costs. two of our agencies, the department is calling me, two of our agencies that were, that are based in the department, now we are moving them out because we are going, and we have to pay for their salaries, we have to pay for their buildings, for their rent, for their movement, everything, their maintenance, because they are, one of them might depend entirely on the department. So those are some of the reasons why the budget has gone up. And in terms of S&T, another thing that I think we should be knowing that salaries for public servants and the senior management, I think, in his time, because over the past 4 or 5 years, they were lagging behind as compared to what the market was paying. And as a result, we were losing a lot of staff at that level, and we couldn't even attract. And cabinet took a decision to increase the salaries around, I think, just September and December. And that also impacted on the S&T because in the past, before the 1st of September last year, all public servants were had to lose their cards. They were not really compensated for S&T when they traveled more than 500 km. So the first 500 kilometers that you travel were not compensated. And things have changed. But every kilometer you travel for business people to claim for that. For the entire department, and that includes our agency. And we also have our international engagement, which also bring us some resources. So that's why our agency is here. But we have over 10% head of our agency.
Thanks, Chair. I think that's
a reasonable answer.
So that's in the interest of time. Move on to, I think, a question by Honorable Cardinal, I think. That's 92% of the budget capacity and fulfilled vacancies in the engineer in terms of attracting the master. Now, again, the service discussion is a sensitive discussion in the sense that I'm sure that most of you read the article on the Sunday Times about this government, the Department of Science and Technology, the funding Survey drying up. Essentially, when we started this journey of the AIDS vaccine initiatives, there were very clear goals. And the goals were that we have to do research in South Africa to develop possible candidate vaccines, a couple of them, 4 or 5 candidate vaccines. And then as part of that, development, we were also expected to develop the research capacity, the people who then do that research to develop these 7 or 8 candidate vaccines. And then these candidate vaccines would be taken through a pipeline to see which ones are likely to really be the vaccine that we need. And we recently, I think a year and a half ago, asked that this project be reviewed by external reviewers, not us, South Africa, not the department. And the result of that review was that the project had shifted from these two main objectives, which are developing several candidate vaccines and take them through the pipeline and develop the capacity. Very few, one or two researchers were receiving funding from SAVI, especially on the back end part of developing this candidate vaccine, and there was no capacity that was developed. And then the second part, of course, of SAVI was to take those candidate vaccines and have trials to see whether these candidate vaccines, to test the efficacy of these. Now, the funding arrangements were then divided into two parts, the Department of Science and Technology would fund the back-end part, and then the Department of Health and other private sector companies. At the time, in fact, I think we had three. We had Eskom, we had Harmony, one of the mining companies, I can't remember, but there were actually three. So they've all pulled up very, very slowly. Again, we can relate that chair at another meeting to tell you why we think this has happened. But the front end bit was supposed then to do this pre-clinical trial to test the efficacy. And our concern as the Department of Science and Technology and our
mandate says we not fund preclinical trials and clinical trials because that's the mandate of another government department, and therefore we're not responsible for that funding. So in terms of answering to you as politicians, if you ask us what our money was doing, we had to give you whether it's building capacity and developing candidate vaccine. And our view from the review, not our view, but the review says this has not happened from the DSC funding money. So we therefore want to continue that work, but maybe under a different banner once that sorting out the issue of the funding for the clinical trials and the ethical. So that's the status. And then vacancies, when we speak about our target is to sit between 8% and 10%. I'm not sure where we are. It varies because at the time that you fill the post, people are resigning, but we've agreed on an 8% to 10% target. Maybe you have the latest.
Just at that point, there was a time when there were very many, many vacancies in the about 50%, something.
We had 18%, and then we have reduced it drastically. And this was a challenge. The challenge is not only for TST, but for the public service as a whole. So it's a moving target. At some point, we were sitting in the middle of the year, and we were boosting at 6.5%. But at the end of the year, it was 17.48%. Because the department is going to be higher. And I think it's going to be worse with the economic recession. But it's a moving target. We are trying our best. Sometimes it takes longer, especially with regard to the cost I think from our caucus. But we have set our target that we should always be within 8% to 10%, which is still high, but sometimes we have tried to put some incentives in place. But at the end of the day, it was to render sense.
Thanks,
Jay.
But again, we can always keep you an update as to where we are in this 8% to 10% range.
And then the there are two questions on this engineering and technology question. The one is whether we are having in the list of scarce skills the shortage of these engineers and technologies, and we work with the Department of Home Affairs to make sure that that list, scarce skills list, has the list of people that we think we need from the engineering and the technology. But the second part is long-term sustainable intervention. And our view is that we have not done well in South Africa in terms of encouraging people to do honours, or there's no honours, masters in engineering, masters and PhD in engineering. In other countries that have done very, very well at the side of patent side, rather than the publication side of stuff, have done this very well. And therefore, we've started to engage with our colleagues in the Department of Education to see whether we can have a systemic intervention in this regard. We think including defining the roles of the universities of technology, but as I say, this is not something that is within our mandate, but we think that there's a bigger systemic discussion that needs to happen to say, how do we incentivize people in engineering, not just to do engineering undergraduate degree and then they quickly go and do an MBA, rather than continue to do a master's in engineering and a PhD in engineering. So this is something that we will be working on, and at the right time we'll come up with some proposals. From the Department of Science and Technology perspective, what we are doing is for each of the programs that are looking at technology development and innovation, we've agreed that we will have 30% of the funding geared towards developing technologies in that regard, in partnership with other universities, science councils, or with overseas partners. So hopefully that will begin to increase the number. And then the third part was whether we encourage the bringing in of people from outside. There are two centers, or one center that we have set up on hydrogen economy work at the University of Western Cape. Because this is a new era that we felt South Africa did not have any capacity on, we brought in two professors, one from Norway and one from former from Russia, who is developing
specific sub-products for the fuel cell that the University of Western Cape. And the other one is helping us in the development of materials and, for the battery, electric vehicle that we talked about. So we had to bring, so we don't have a problem with bringing skills in the country if we think we don't have that capacity and we have to develop certain areas. Now, I don't know, Polly, if you want to briefly talk about our status with the fixed asset register and how we fix it.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DJ. The issue of the fixed assets is quite important for the department and the Auditor General, simply because the assets are a representative of the resources in a government department. And the management thereof is quite important. And also what I would like to highlight is that during the 2007 and 2008 financial year, we did not have any queries which were raised by the AG regarding our asset register. That query was raised in the other year, which was 2007 and 2006. And it was a matter of emphasis. So the following year, financial year, we ensured that we respond to the query, and we ensured that we have a complete asset register. And as you would have probably read our annual financial report for the 2007 and 2008, that issue was not raised, meaning to say that we have taken care of the problem. And what I would like to say also is that managing assets is managing the assets is not a once-off kind of process. It's something that we continuously ensure that we manage it properly, because there are changes as we move along. You know, during the financial year, things get to be misplaced, and we have to ensure that we manage those and we understand where the assets are and how many we have. So we have also ensured that since it's such an important matter, we put it in our radar screen. That is one of our risk areas. So we ensure that we are always on top of everything when it comes to that. Thank you.
Thanks. Two more questions, Chair. The one is from Honourable Mo, other one, and then yourself. I think the first part is the overseas investment. I think I've covered that in the earlier response. And then the second one was the demystifying science and technology. Two responses as far as that is concerned. The first one is we've decided to enlarge the Science Week that we've talked about so that it doesn't focus on only the schools, but it also focuses on the public in general. So we'll have programs that are targeting the general public around how TIA can help, SMEs can get to the center to help them. But we've also decided to speak to the National Research Foundation to broaden the mandate of their public awareness agency SASTA, so that the mandate covers more than just the schools, and I think we are working on finalizing what that mandate is going to be. So we'll have specific targeted interventions for raising awareness of demystifying science and technology, not only within the schools level, which is what SASTA and the Science Week has focused in attention on, but to bring the other institutions as well. And the third question was whether the graduates that come out of the universities do actually spend time in the public sector. Well, at the public sector level of, for instance, the positions in government, we think so. But in fact, so much so that people in universities are complaining that the likes of myself should be spending time at the university and not in the government department, and others, of course, which are in the department. But we also have the science councils, and they absorb a large number of people who come from the university to
do research. Whether that is enough, I mean, we don't know. We don't have the statistics of how many actually get absorbed. Maybe this is something we need to think about and start tracking. And then I think your last question was whether the capsule is available. It is available on a trial basis, but not for the public, because we asked the Department of Health to help us with the registration of the use of the capsule, the nanocapsule, with the medicines control council. So that's where we are as far as that is concerned. But in terms of just trying it out and efficacy, I think they have started to test it in the animals. So they inject the animals with virus, and then they ask them to take the capsule and see how that works. So the next stage would be to try it to human beings once those trials are successful. And then your last set of questions, Chair, on the nanotech program. At the universities, I think we now have a specific program to develop the infrastructure for nanotechnology. And again, I can't remember the figures, but we have a sizable program. I think it's around 30 million rand to develop the infrastructure and the courses for nanotechnology. But what we've also done is we've set up two nanotechnology innovation centers. One at the CSIR that looks at the development and the applications of nanotechnology in the manufacturing sector, and the other one at MinTech that looks at the development of nanotechnology in the bio area. And I think, if I remember very well, I was told that it is that they have, I think, around 80 or thereabout master's and PhD students that are working on the program, and I think the same number that is working at MinTech. So I think it's just beginning to have the adequate capacity, but as you say, if you compare ourselves with what other countries have invested, like Russia, you really get scared. I mean, we've got a short story. We went to Japan last year, and we were telling them about our nano program, and they asked us how many people we have, and we told them hundreds. And most of you know that Japanese are very polite people. They don't usually laugh at you, but this time they laughed at us because they said, how much is a joke? You should be talking about thousands of numbers if you really want to make this program a serious program. But we are trying, as I say, with these three interventions. And then your short answer to your flying cars, the answer is no. But it's something we can never look at. The way that we want to develop the space program is to really look at the downstream applications and the utilization of space for society to benefit from. And then later on, we'll then go back and see whether there's market for manufacturing satellites. In certain instances, there'd be a need for us to have our own strategic capacity for the manufacturing of the images that are needed for a variety of, shall we say, specialized applications using space with our colleagues. So the specific answer to your question is no. And then Marjorie wants to address the question of climate change.
Before I do that to you, Chair, I want to add on to what the DG had responded to in terms of the demystifying science and technology and so on. In another new initiative that's starting out, our focus is not on demystifying science and technology, but it's about having a stronger community outreach, and particularly in the context of rural communities. The DST is using a platform that has been used elsewhere in the world, where it's recognized that a university holds a body of collective intelligence. Generally, we try to have all of that knowledge going from the university to industry. And what we've been asking ourselves is, why shouldn't that body of knowledge be benefiting the community surrounding that university? Why shouldn't they benefit in terms of they have professors there, learned people, who are their main job is teaching. But why can't we facilitate a mechanism where they have access to all of that intelligence in terms of their ordinary problems, solving problems which they may simply need more information, access to information, or they need somebody at a high enough level to facilitate thinking around whether it's transport or food security or whatever the case is. What we are setting up is what we call university community development centers, and we're rolling 5 out, and these 5 are based at Sulu University, University of Venda, Zululand University, University of Forte, and University of Limpopo. So the target is, we're not talking about universities in highly urbanized settings where people actually do have access to information. We're talking about the rural settings where universities find themselves surrounded by large numbers of rural communities. What we will be working on through Venda Forte is to actually say the university is getting funding to provide assistance to the community on a range of problems. First session with the university sits down with the communities is to work with them to analyze what are their constraints to development, what are the constraints to growth for the community, what information should be made available, and what types of interactions should the university have with the communities in those regions. So it's not about demystifying, but it's more using the scientific body at the university to actually empower the community. On the question on the climate change, yes, those are internationally the 3 major areas of focus. The mitigation, and on that one, we are most likely going to be coming back to the portfolio committee to share with you our energy grand challenge and what instruments we've structured into that to look at our shift over time away from a carbon-based economy. And then the other area, as you say, is adaptation. And adaptation happens in your sectors like agriculture, the biodiversity, conservation, and sustainable utilization. And the approach, as the DG mentioned, is that we are rather looking sector by sector and trying to devise innovation plans that we will implement in partnership with the department. So we'll be working with agriculture, we will be working with water affairs and environment and so on. Something that you may be interested in is that in putting technology to work in helping to anticipate impacts of climate change is a risk and vulnerability atlas. We recognize, as South Africa, as has happened internationally, that the pain of climate change happens at a local level. That is, the impact is it's severe storm weather, it's severe flooding, or it's severe drought, and it's actually your municipalities that are supposed to be enabled to anticipate when they're going to be extreme events, how vulnerable they are, and what they can put in place. And so we call that our risk and vulnerability atlas, where we will be analyzing the vulnerability levels across municipalities in South Africa. It's new work that's starting because we've only just put this global change grand challenge on the table. But the workshops that we've been having have been very supportive around it.
Actually, there are 2 provinces that have been identified in South Africa, Western Cape and KZN, already a problem. But another problem is also the question of financing those adaptation programs and mitigation programs. And these are some of the things that we're tackling with, which I think the Copenhagen Conference will be able to, you know, to address. But the main one is the one that is tomorrow, because it's going to be, there will be some 10 CEO of world corporations who are going to be looking into how to finance these things. So that the G8 plus G5 in July, heads of states are able to come up with a concrete finance plan. Yeah. I had DG, you were talking about the development of the Zirconium. Is it for that, or it's just generally developing the economy, the metal line is of the economy.
I'm not so sure whether it's got applications in uranium. Because it came from Nexa, it might very well be. But these applications are downstream applications. I was told that in the packaging, this zirconium has huge applications, including the toothpaste holder and a range of other packaging of products where the chemical is used to extend the shelf life. And there are different levels of beneficiation, I think, that the company is trying to do. But what you're saying is possible because, as I say, they came out of the middle of it.
The fuel cell technologies, the suite complained about the expense, that it has proved to be very expensive, and they said that they abandoned the development of those fuel cell technology based vehicles. Some few buses they already developed. How much do you find that it's a very expensive project to engage on? What
I say? Chair, maybe for the benefit of the other members, there are two aspects to fuel cell. The one is the use of fuel cell cars and buses at the moment. It's an expensive technology when you use it at the applications, and if you compare it with the engine or the diesel or the petrol engine. But there are people who are trying to calculate whether that's a fair calculation, because remember, with the fuel cell, there is zero emission. Actually, you get water out of the fuel cell. And therefore, people say it's an unfair calculation. But even then, because these systems are not commercialized, the cost of driving or the driving of the cost of manufacturing because of the economy of scale is not down enough. But from the research end, which is where things are at the moment, we think that there are opportunities for countries like South Africa to play an important role. Now, as most of you know, 75% of platinum is in South Africa and Zimbabwe. And the main material that is responsible for the catalytic activity for splitting hydrogen, sorry, water, into hydrogen, to hydrogen ions and oxygen ions, is platinum. We think in South Africa we have a very, very good opportunity, together with the catalysis expertise that Sasol has over time in developing catalysts that are needed for the manufacturing of petrochemicals from coal. And therefore we putting together that capacity both at UCT and UWC to see whether we can be at the forefront of using this platinum and catalysis to understand the manufacturing of the next generation of fuel cells. Now, we are working with a company at the moment from Germany, which wants to manufacture some of these fuel systems in South Africa, because they believe of the expertise and the research we do, we are well located to do that. And I think there's an agreement that will be signed with one center of competence that we've set up at GWC with this company in Germany. We are also working with another company, which is working with from the UK, that is looking for alternative applications for platinum. And we are looking at developing different fuel systems for standalone applications in South Africa and rural areas. Now, as you know, there are different feeds of hydrogen that you need in order for you to drive the fuel cell. So they are looking at different feeds. We can actually even use biomass in South Africa to generate the right hydrogen that you need for. So there are a couple of possibilities at the research level that still create opportunities. But on the, as I say, on the just the use of fuel cells for cars or buses, I believe it's
well, are almost approaching the runoff of time. I'll allow some one question for each member now so that we can wind up, because it looks like we've got about only 10 minutes. I see the honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, one question. All right. This whole bridging program between basic and commercialization, I fully concur that we need to do it, and that perhaps patents would be one measure of success, but I also think that beneficiation would be another measure of success. It's not with commercializing something in another country, but I mean, anecdotally, you know, I'm not really sure I know what I'm talking about. Anecdotally, I think we recall there's been a number of things that have happened here where we've taken the lead with a product, and then it's promptly gone abroad. I mean, for example, we invented the wind-up radio. It started production here, uneconomical, shipped it to China. Started the plate paraffin, started here, turned it down, shipped it to Vietnam. That's low-tech stuff, but nonetheless, if we can't even produce low-tech economically, you know, what do we do? On a high-tech level, we invented some very good developments in silicon electrical technology. We went promptly to Siemens in Germany, so our only benefits are royalties. So my question would be, you know, it's one thing to bridge the gap by actually patenting and getting the knowledge, but then if it properly leaves the country, so what are the departments, how do you work? Maybe with DTI or what? But what steps can you take or have you taken, or can you take, contemplate taking, to help not only nurture, but nurture it for the state here?
Yeah.
Short question. We are very interested in space, and we're talking space. Do we have any young people who are interested in space work that you are so interested in? And attached to that, what is it that industry is also doing to promote a skills in the field of science?
Yes,
thank you, sir. Happy to have to speak nicely about my colleagues in government. Yes, I think there are attempts that we are having to convince us that sometimes there is value in manufacturing things in South Africa. But it's a debate that sort of straddles a little bit outside the mandate of the DfT. We can only show that these things can be done, but we are not the key decision maker in terms of saying definitely this has got to be done. At the moment, just to give you two examples of the work that we're doing to try and drive the agenda that you're proposing, is that we are currently in discussion with one government department that is in the field of buying aeroplanes. And we are putting together a consortium of research institutions that are looking at the use of a special material called titanium, which is a very light metal, but it's got the same strength and speed, and therefore in terms of fuel efficiency, in the aircraft industry, medical applications, as well as medical, it's a very important material. Now, we have an abundance of this material on the east coast of this country, or the raw material, and we're looking at the technologies for adding value on this so that we can produce the components for the aircraft industry and the motor industry. So we've started this thinking, and therefore what we'd like to do, for instance, with this other government department is that when we buy these aeroplanes, let's agree with the manufacturers of the planes that if we buy 10 of them, we want to make sure that certain components of these aircraft from that require titanium will be manufactured here. We're doing the research and development. The same with the car. We are looking at the techno-economic feasibility studies that look at what would be the investment that would be required for us to invest in the technology and the manufacturing of the car in South Africa, and what are the immediate spin-off and the spin-offs beyond that. We are also involved in a task team with the Department of Health to look at the local production of some of the pharmaceuticals as part of the offset
agreement of government procurement of the large pharmaceutical for the hospital. So the thinking, I think, is beginning to develop now, and I can give you another example where in the battery for the electric vehicle, the material is lithium manganese oxide, that is the main driver for the material. We have a lot of manganese in South Africa, so we think we can add value in manganese if we can set up this manufacturing for these batteries in South Africa. But we need lithium, and we need it. We know that lithium is in large numbers and in abundance in the DRC. So we're working with our colleagues in one of the clusters to see whether we can have a partnership that says if we have a bilateral with DRC, how can we engage with them so that we can have lithium? And so it's still a complicated, but as you pointed out, new things and new thinking that is hopefully going to drive science and technology towards economic activity. And then I think on the space, yes, there are young people. We have a program now at Cape University of Technology that is beginning to take youngsters into the program for the space manufacturing, satellite and also downstream applications. And then the second question of the industry promoting skills and science, it's been a ad hoc, to be honest, in the sense that a lot of private sector companies that are involved in R&D, they fund bursaries. But we want to find another way in these centers of competence that we've talked about. We'd like them to invest in those programs 30%, that government would invest about 70% just roughly, and part of the money that they would invest would be on skills development. So we are trying to develop a framework for engaging the private sector in the skills development.
Thank you very much. I think we can say that we've come to the end of this session, but I just wanted to find out how many of your entities are present here, because, or if at all, I mean, it could only be if there was something, probably, as you know, one of the comments that if you come, you must come with your entities so that you are able to look into it. But if you feel that they do not add any value, then we want to know for that.
Chair, it's by perhaps accident or by their own initiative that they are here. The NRF, I think, is represented at the back. And the CSIR is also. She was here, she just left to represent. But I think maybe in the future we should extend the invitation to our agency to be part of this group. Yes, Mackie and Arthur would have also invited them as well.
At least Naki can be represented because you are here, even if you are also. Yeah, so you also represent Naki automatically. Yes. All right. Yeah, I just wanted to, yeah, because the conversation wanted to know if the entities are also around here, yeah, you know, because that is the requirement of budget for the presentation. I think members, therefore, will have to upgrade about, I think we have had some time to interrogate the report from this department, and we will have to, if there are any points that we need, that you want noted here, we have to note them in accordance with your wishes before we adopt this report. Are there any areas of concern that you want them taken into note in this report that you are going to send to the Office of the Speaker as having listened and adopted the strategic plan of the department? You have raised some points. Those are some of the points you may want them taken note of in subsequent interactions or development of the program of the year.
I'm just a bit ignorant. We're having budget discussion, and the report, sorry, what's this report of ours meant to be saying or not saying?
There are after the supervision, we need to send a report to the office that our committee has now been briefed by the strategic plans of the department, which we'll be debating next week. So that's a requirement. We can't just move through the debate without having interacted with them. And in that sense, if there are any point of law that we have accepted it, but we wanted that the department must know these things in their subsequent development of the structure that they gave to us.
The reason I was asking is because it's a reporter simply saying we met with the department and we had a basic interrogation for the budget hearing, fine. But I thought you said earlier that we're going to have a 2-day or proper interrogation of the strategic plan. And I would have thought that perhaps that content, that portion where we say we agree with the department or don't agree, could be held over to that interrogation because then we've got more in time. But at this, you have to have this.
This one is procedural. I mean, that it should appear in the ATC that we have already met with the department. That's what I want. And then we will have the workshop, which will now inform us about many other things in detail. That this does not exclude automatically. It's a different part of the work in progress. This is our annual body, and actually that is very important what we have raised, that we have interacted with the department, but we have members have noted that the more interaction is needed, like in the form of a workshop, so that because most of us I knew in the committee want to be updated about the programs and the aims of some of the programs of the department. I think that's a point which you must note here. Any other point, if at all? Right. I think we've come to the end, therefore, of that. We'll adopt the report as such. We will have, there are some minutes of the last meeting which we also need to adopt. I've always liked that, if you want to move in pace, so that you do not find yourself backlogged with some work of the previous year, the other year. I always like that we adopt minutes of our previous interactions, and so that we know that by the end of the year or by the end of the term, we do not have work to be split into our other constituent activities. So, of course, it's a very short program of minutes, which they are just about last week when we met, that we met for the first time and who were there, and if all is in order, then we can adopt those minutes. I'm sure members have been circulated the copies of those minutes. So I would just need now that one person must move and the other second it, and then we adopt them as such. I suppose to open your micro so that it's recorded.
I second the adoption of the meeting. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable member. So, with that, I think we've come to the end of our interaction. We will therefore report everything accordingly. And if everything goes well, I'll have to be off tomorrow to this climate change thing.
get a deal.